Live from the Pathway Studios in Johnston proper, you are Live from the Path.
And you're listening to Live from the Path, coming to you from the Pathway Studios here in Johnston proper. It's just plain good to see you.
Thanks.
Born, I was born this way. Thank you.
I'm happy to be here.
Yeah, hey, Boova.
Hey.
What's happening?
I'm back.
Hey, last week we had to come up with a number of different things that could have been a stand-in, Boova. One was a mop with a mustache. It tells you how desperate we are.
A mop with a mustache was a stand-in Boova.
It was very silent.
Yeah, actually, we asked it a question. It rambled on for 8 minutes, and like, we found the guy.
This broom is great.
All right, yeah, you're listening live from the Path. Thanks for joining us tonight. We have a show for you. Show for you tonight. So we got some Pope style advice. Mike, you got some. Boova, you got some.
I got one.
All right, doubling up on the Pope style. I just got a couple random things that really irritated me within the last half an hour.
Right.
And I will share those with you, and I don't they may or may not have legs.
I've been here for the entire last half an hour, so I'm scared that I might be one of the irritants.
It might have something to do with you.
You don't notice when I bubble under the surface.
Yeah. No, I don't. That's why I'm saying.
I get extra 10 pimples on my back.
That's weird.
No doubt.
I've been calling that mop last half hour trying to get him in here.
Boova came back. We need you to take over again.
All right, here we go. So I'll tell you the two things that have been like, irritating me within the last half an hour. So one of the things I was thinking on the way here when I was driving in is sometimes finding content for our show is kind of difficult because the type of conversation that people have on normal talk radio is it's because there's people on polar opposites, two ends of the spectrum, and they're going to duke it out and try to figure out what the best thing is. But like, there's a reason that most of Christian radio is just a guy preaching at you or a group of guys who are preaching at you but try to make it not feel like they're preaching at you. They kind of talk in like a, hey, we're buddies fashion, but they're really preaching at you.
Was that us?
Are you calling us out?
No, that's not us. Right. No, we're not qualified for any of that stuff.
Right on.
But there's a reason it's that way is because you come from a basic worldview that says God has already laid down what is true and what is not true, right? And so we really have to manufacture crises. You know, it's like, hey, should we use pews or should we use chairs? Here's a lame Christian discussion to have. You know, because like all the big questions of life have been solved, haven't they? Hey, what am I doing here?
Well, that's true. The B discussion is generally if people aren't following said Jesus type advice. Like when God says, here's the deal, and people are like, I don't know if that's the deal, then the discussion arises. But apart from that,
There's theological things that might go back a couple 300 years, but generally there's nothing new.
Yeah, right.
Someone tries to come up with something new, but it's like, yeah, that was already talked about like 6 centuries ago.
Yeah, exactly.
I know Jesus wasn't real. It's like, okay, that's new.
Yeah.
Good one.
Jesus didn't really die. All right. You know, yeah, it's...
That's what I'm saying. So to find things to talk about on the show, we do something that there's always a real danger in is we end up arguing about shallow Jesus things.
Yes.
Like chairs and pews.
Yeah, that's true.
And, you know, like whether you got to wear a suit or not. Now, to a certain extent, I think there's
hey man, that suit discussion.
There's some reason to talk about that stuff.
Yeah.
But like,
because people are hanging on it. That's the thing is they're living on it. That's generally the problem with the. That's why the shallow discussions turn into big discussions is because people live in the shallow and then they turn them into a big.
They make them really big.
They turn them into a big pool. Like,
yeah.
In fact, I've had this conversation with my 6-year-old daughter. Like, this is our new thing, right? Is this a big thing or is it a little thing? And it's a help to type to discern of what a proper reaction is to something that happened, right? And, like, generally, we could probably, you know, stave the same advice for the church when something comes up and the question just needs to be asked, is this a big thing or a little thing? And if it's a little thing, then let's equal it with a little response instead of a big one, you know? But it doesn't tend to do that. Like, the church has a magnifying glass on little things, and then they like to blow them up because the big things have already been... Disgusting.
Exactly. You got nothing to do but fight over small things like the color walls and what the chairs look like and that kind of thing. So anyway, so broad story. So like sometimes finding stuff to talk about on our show is difficult because like I don't necessarily want to Pharisee up a bunch of minor items, but we we can handle certain things. But like there's not a lot of big things to talk about. But here's what I ran into when I was digging for stuff. Right. Sometimes there's a couple of Christian websites. We'll go around and look for petty arguments that we can jump on board. You know.
Oh, right on.
Hey, here's someone else's problem. Let's insert ourselves into
Let's laugh at them.
Yeah. That's why it's worth having an internet show. So anyway, I was scanning the CNN Belief blog, and the CNN Belief blog is generally good for like all types of like idiot type of behavior.
Oh yeah.
But here's one thing. It was just the opening paragraph here. It really threw me off. And it's a story about a lady who's a minister in the Lutheran Church. I don't care. It's not what we're talking about. And it said a journey of faith in 5 tattoos. Okay, so it's a story of 5 tattoos that she has and how, like, different milestones of her life. Whatever, it take it or leave it, interesting story. But the first thing that she writes is, the first tattoo I got was meant to set me apart from my conservative suburban Christian community, a way to signify I don't belong to your tribe. And I thought, like that. Now, take it out of the context of a Christian community. Like, that's just kind of a nasty thing to do, isn't it?
Yeah.
Is to say, like, hey, I'm not a part of your tribe.
Well, I suppose kind of. I mean, unless she's taking the tact as like some undercover Jesus agent for people who maybe would not dig on. Like we've had Rick Gray in the show, right? And he's a tattoo artist, right?
Yep.
And I've always had a little bit of there's a little bit of excitement for me in him because he has the opportunity to reach people that would ignore me. You know what I'm saying? That would pass me off as being not trustworthy. Just because of my appearance, right?
Yeah.
And he becomes trustworthy because he's a tattoo man.
Yeah.
Just because of his appearance, right? And, like, I don't know. The thing is, like, if I guess I was leaning towards if she was doing that for that reason, that might be okay. But then mid-thought, I guess I thought that's disingenuous and they'd see right through it and then it'd be done for, right? Like, they find Rick Gray credible because he is an actual tattoo artist and you know, they have something in common. And so when he talks about Jesus, it carries a lot of weight to people because he's genuine in that, you know? And, like, but I guess I can't think of a good defense on why you would.
Right, because like if you got a tattoo with a mop riding a motorcycle and put it on your face or something, you're like, hey, buddy, now let's get on this with this discussion.
Yeah.
It's not genuine. And I guess I was thinking it in the context, I don't even care that it's a tattoo, really. It was the thought of looking back at some community or another, like a group of people that you were otherwise a part of and saying, I want it to be clear to you that I'm not part of your community. They're like, I'm stepping outside of whatever this is, and I don't want to be part of it. And I thought, man, that's kind of rough. That's kind of a rough thing to do.
But my take the other half of it, you know, is it possible that we breed a community where she doesn't fit in?
No, she had to get the tattoo to like give him the finger, basically.
Well,
it's like the finger.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, it's a blatant, I want nothing to do with you. I'm not part of your tribe is how she said it, right? Yeah, that seems like it just kind of flipping the bird and saying, you know, deuces, see you later. I'm out of here. I'm not part of your tribe. Which seems kind of disrespectful.
Here's the deal. It's been something in the back of my mind of how do I sometimes view the bride of Christ? Even though often the church is filled with like fuddy-duddy folk that I'm like, I don't understand your behavior. It really irritated me. Frankly, I think you're making it hard to discuss Jesus with people with the things that you're doing. Like, that's still my community. Whether that guy acts like I act or not, whether he's hip enough for me, he's still my community.
Yeah. It's your community because we acknowledge Jesus Christ as Lord, as the Son of the living God, as the Savior of mankind. The problem is, in today's contemporary culture, there are churches that don't even acknowledge that. So I'm not saying that's what she is, but that's what usually comes to my mind when they talk about, well, I'm not one of you people. I'm not part of you Bible-believing people. You know, like I say, that may not be what she was saying, but that there are situations where that would be the case, and they want to separate themselves from us. And I always say, why do you call yourself a church? Why do you dress yourself in some type of religion when you don't believe in the God that by the term church.
Now, I don't know. That seems a bit unfair because I believe in the God, but I don't believe in a lot of the churches. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, a lot of the people that say that they represent God are really more of a religious foundation than they are of a following of Jesus Christ, right? And so, like,
Hold on, but are they a misguided member of your community or are they not your community?
I feel like they're not my community.
I think you're wrong about that. I think, like, foundationally, whether they are enacting it poorly or whether they are in a different part of their relationship with
how
Christ
poorly
than you
do
are,
you have to enact it before it's an obvious sign of your unbelief? Like, it's like, wouldn't you eventually hope to see a fruit of the Spirit? Otherwise, it's a tree that doesn't produce
but,
anything.
But you are harsher on that guy than the guy that's openly sinning on the corner.
Yes. Yes, I am.
Yeah. So is Jesus.
Well, no, I don't think that's necessarily
with the religious
true.
People.
Well, it depends on what types of religious folks, right? Because, like, you have, like, we're talking about the guy who's simply mistaken, right? He believes one thing and is acting in a way based upon that.
Hold on a
as
minute.
Opposed to, like, a pharisaical guy who's basically
what,
control.
What type of
brain
is simply mistaken are you talking about? Because, like we've said, the Bible pretty much lays out how it's supposed to go. Like, are you mistaken because you've been reading the Bible and ignoring things? Because that doesn't count as... Are you mistaken because you haven't read it at all?
Yes.
Because that doesn't count.
Right, but like, I think they don't know the difference. You know what I'm saying? Like, I think they grew up in a church atmosphere where the Bible wasn't center.
I'm starting a scoff. Go ahead.
That's your own fault, though.
No, agreed.
That you never actually opened the book and read it.
It's there to be read.
We're off. Wow, this is crazy. I shouldn't be here.
It turns
they don't
out.
Follow this book that they say they follow.
I agree to a certain extent. But, like, if you're raised in an environment, either a home, church, whatever, and you were surrounded by folks who've basically sold you this type of religion that didn't include the Bible. Like I would find it outrageous because the Bible is the center of where my knowledge for Christianity comes from, as opposed to relying on that community to be the people that lead me in that direction. So all I'm saying is I think there are folks who have a mistaken view of God because the community that they grew up in, family, friends, whatever, had that same thing. And they had no reason to think that wasn't accurate. Because, and you say, well, you know, like, you should have been reading the Bible in the first place, but that's because you hold Scripture in high reverence. But if you're not raised in an environment like that, it's very possible that you can go through those motions and not hold Scripture in high reverence.
Isn't it possible that you don't have a faith? If the faith that you've received, if it does not hold Scripture in high reverence, then it's not it. Like, how can you claim to follow the God of the Bible and not read the Bible or know anything about the Bible?
Even your phrasing would reflect a different view of that than some church. I mean, like, there's mainline denominations that aren't that. And
you're saying that are not following Jesus?
Yes.
Okay, then I think that part of the community thing was right on.
Yeah. I'm with Mike on this one.
that never happens. I don't think we're missing the crux of the discussion like you're thinking.
No, I think you are to a certain extent. I think you are.
You can't have everything to a certain extent. To a certain extent, me and Dan are right about this.
I mean, there are different flavors of churches that are Bible-believing churches that think differently than I do. I am not a Calvinist. I have a lot of friends who are Calvinists, and they could argue till they're, you know, in the middle of the night until they're blue in the face. I would still disagree with them. I would still call them part of my community. Because they acknowledge Jesus Christ as Lord. We just see a little bit different twist on things. But there are some whole entire denominations that literally have voted Jesus off the island and said, we don't really need that. And they have Jesus in their name. It's like, well, why don't you go ahead and take Jesus out of your name and call yourself something else? Because you're not Jesus.
Here's the thing. If you grew up in a church where the Bible wasn't held in high regard, I pretty much put you in the same camp as someone who didn't go to church at all.
True, fair.
Right? So, I mean, like, you're not part of my community. That's what I would say. That doesn't mean they're not to be loved.
Oh,
it
yeah,
just
yeah.
means not part of my community.
It means we need to show them Jesus and get him in the community.
Yeah.
Rather than say, well, I just hope that works out for you. You just stay in that community over there, in that tribe, and I know for a fact that won't get you to heaven. But hey, you know, I don't think that
people don't like that, Dan.
Yeah,
people don't like it when you say stuff like that.
That's true. That's true. That mustache mop thing was real upset when Dan talks like that.
Yeah,
he gets all fired up. All right. So okay, second thing I ran into. I was searching the ChristianPost.com and there was an advertisement on the right hand side of the screen, and it makes me question how responsible as a purveyor of, say, Christian news. Radio, whatever. Like, choose your forum that you've just Christian media. Are you responsible for the theology of things that you will permit on your station, site, whatever? Because there's like a book for sale over here on the right hand side, and the title of the book is "Favor Fire: Prayers That Bring Faster Results." And there's a picture of some, like, three well-dressed power people on the front. And then, like, the hands of God with a two-story house and what appears to be roughly $18,000. And then, like, a cheesy, like, old-school robber sack with a dollar sign on it. A sack of money. And I thought, that's ludicrous. That's a ludicrous advertisement. Okay, and then here's the propaganda that surrounds this book. Favor fire prayers that bring faster results. That's a clever title, by the way. Is a book will enable you to walk unlimited, capitalized, in the divine favor, spelled like a European, of God. Anything God can do, prayer can do also, comma, no space. So as you capital pray these capital prayers, capital U, will see yourself walking in a higher capital dimension of favor daily.
Wow.
You will experience capital turnaround in your life, marriage, job, and business in Jesus' name. Struggling in life is not your portion. You will, all caps, make it to the top in life in Jesus' name, exclamation point, exclamation point, exclamation point.
There couldn't be anything more wrong with that description.
What was that called? Because I need to order it quick.
Right.
Favor fire prayers that bring faster results.
Faster results to what?
Big monies.
Yeah. God, you're not answering my prayers fast enough. I must not be doing this right.
Yeah.
It will have nothing to do with the fact that you do not will to give me the two-story house or the $18,000 or the burglar sack of money. It's obviously that I'm not praying the right quick prayers. Do you have hotkeys on your prayer keyboard, God? Seriously.
It's proposed to be like a God whip.
It's
move faster, Lord, with what I'm asking for.
It's idolatry. You know what I'm saying? It's taking God off his throne and putting prayer on the throne, and then be like, if you do this prayer, the prayer will provide things for you.
I'm scared of the person that orders this book.
Anything God can do, prayer can do also.
Yeah.
Right.
Classic idolatry. Yes.
Wow.
These words are the power. It's not you, God. It's the words that I'm speaking.
But this is on a legitimate Christian website, right?
I got an idea. Ready? We're going to make a book just like this, okay? We're going to put it up for sale on a Christian website, pay big money, advertise the thing, and they're gonna order it, and we're going to make all kinds of promises that aren't true at all. And then when they order the thing, we're going to send them a Bible.
Nice.
Fair?
Yes? I was going to say, what if we have those titles, but actually, put legitimate text in there, and that'll surprise them. They'll be like, wait a minute.
Highlight your favorite verses.
Like you sold it to them under false pretense. Like, I wanted to be rich. I didn't want to be holy.
Holy.
But the faster results are you getting it right with the Lord.
I was going to say, that's true. Aligning yourself with the will of God might be a lot faster than quick prayers.
You know, on the whole, Christian media is a shaky tower. You know what I'm saying? It's just like, it's built on feeble stones. And it's like a... It's like a string and puppet show. Like it's, in fact, I don't even know how it's done, to be honest with you. Like, it seems like mostly Christian media is either it's got to be super cheesy as to not offend anybody, or it has to be obviously for profit. You know, I know why when I listen to preaching on the radio that they're shilling for money at the end. It always used to just irritate the living boots out of me. I couldn't take it. They're like, well, you know, God's leading you to give money to this ministry, blah, blah, blah. We'll send you a pamphlet. I'm like, you know, if you were doing this for the Lord, you would be fine. He would be supporting your ministry. But I know that they have to keep some things up. But sometimes I always feel like there's a line that almost every Christian program crosses, you know, where they're like, They cross that one line between being supported and then glorifying your show. Whether it glorifies Jesus or not, it's glorifying your show, right?
Yeah, somewhere in there you're building your kingdom. And if God's kingdom grows, that's okay. But it's really the show's kingdom.
And I'm not saying that there's not guys out there that are doing it for the right reasons.
Sure.
I'm just saying it's a fickle broom to ride.
Yeah.
You know, like to the Christian music artists are almost the same... of the same caliber. Like, I don't know how they how they teeter on that, you know, like they play a show and someone's like, I love your band. Like, every time, do you be that awkward guy? He's like, yeah, it really wasn't me. It was the Holy Spirit working through me. But thank you. Ugh. You know, I don't want to talk to that guy. He's annoying. You know, it's just like the guys from the worship band. People are like, you did a great job. You know, like, they don't know how to accept a compliment for nothing. They're always hey, you know, so, oh, God, it's not really me. Okay, Humble Harry. I'm just trying to pay you a compliment.
You practiced for 25 years so you could play that. I can't play it. It has a little bit of you in there.
It's got to be a little bit, right?
Remember, like, $1,000 gets you to apostle level.
The apostle level. Right. I don't know. It's like I said, it's just like I listen to a lot of Christian media, obviously, and a lot of stuff in print. And I just sometimes it just feels like such a shaky road to walk to see how you're, you know, how to navigate it by still glorifying God and then not shilling so much for your own advancement that it bypasses what you're trying to do. But maybe running a church is the same way. You know, like you always want your church to grow, and like and so. You know, does your main push become Jesus or the church so that people will get into the church and learn about Jesus? You know, most of Christian media is almost the exact same tact. You know, if the show gets popular or the blog gets popular, then people will hear my Jesus ramblings and therefore learn more about Jesus than otherwise they wouldn't have heard it, you know? And I don't know. It seems like it's a teeter-totter.
She's a prophetess, my bad.
Who?
The lady that wrote that book. Prophetess Esther Nanadi.
Yeah, I'm sure that she is.
Here's what I don't understand. What is with people that can't you see that you're not a prophetess if you don't have proper grammar and punctuation?
The Lord has to navigate the language.
I feel like, I mean, come on, have proofread. So somebody just proofread it. Stop with the you can pick out a huckster, unnecessary capitalization. Every word has to mean more than it's supposed to, so you capitalize it, and then you're like, oh, it's so deep.
I got three people on my Facebook that are prophetesses with their big capitals.
She wants believes everywhere to rise and shine. Shine, rise and shine are both capitalized, so the Gentiles, capitalized, will come to the saving knowledge of Lord Jesus Christ. She is co-pastor without a hyphen. I'm just saying, like, proofread it. What would it take?
It takes extra money.
Just pay a guy.
Yeah, I mean, have somebody. I probably spend more time on like a single easy email to like the power company, making sure that it's like, you know, capitalized correctly, got the right punctuation on it. Even on the phone, I text message full sentences.
Yeah,
it's just how I do things.
Yeah, what drives me crazy is then, like when you switched your mind halfway and then and you forgot to go back and fix something like from past tense to, you know, like in your sentence. Every once in a while I'll do that, and then I send it. I'm like,
I look like a mop.
Yeah, exactly.
With a mustache.
That's what you guys like. Immediately after you send an important email, you go read through it.
Yes.
Yeah. Check it. Oh yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
That's universal, man.
I check it every day. I check my sent folder. Be like, did I really mean that? Oh yeah, I did.
Yeah.
If I'm sending a really really important business email or email in my personal life, I make sure that I read it. I walk away from my desk for a little bit, leave it up, and when I come back, I open my screen, unlock my computer, and then I read it again. And once I've done it twice, I'm completely content with sending it. But I would much rather do that and spend 25 extra minutes than send an email that is just horrid when it comes to grammar, just looking absolutely terrible, incorrect capitalization, incorrect punctuation, and then look like a buffoon. To my superiors or someone else that might see my business email. So I'm weird about that. I have to make sure that they're right. I go crazy if they're not.
There's an entry on her website. She's got a blog. And under there's a godly marriage category. So I clicked this to see what type of advice is on here. And the advice posted June 15th of 2013 is Faith Clinic, Faith Clinic, Faith Clinic. That's it.
Wow.
So I mean, what kind of responsibility does, say, ChristianPost.com have to weed out things like that?
I don't really think about ChristianPost.com. I'm assuming they're not a Jesus company. They're just a guy who owns a website called ChristianPost.com and accepts solicitations from people.
Yeah, maybe.
What are your thoughts on that?
That might be.
That's slander. I don't know. I don't know anything if that's true or not. But that's what I would guess, right? I know people that run legitimate Christian websites that watch pretty closely what they endorse, what they advertise, what they have on their site, because it's important, right? Like, it's a picture of a man. It's a picture of your company.
They got a statement of faith out here.
Okay.
Weird.
Well,
I don't think it addresses prophetesses.
Well, that's unfortunate.
Anywho. Okay.
We do not endorse flame prayer or whatever it is.
Cool.
You're all listening live from the path on livefromthepath.org. Broadcasting from, what is it, 10 to 11 on Monday nights. We're also hitting the KTIA Saturday nights from 7 o'clock to 8 o'clock. Both are considered the witching hour. Depending on what day it is.
Yeah, yeah. Saturdays at 7, that's the witching hour.
Definitely.
You betcha.
So you should check that out along with the podcast. We got a couple more things coming up for the show here. We got some Pope's Hall advice. We also have some Dear Life from the Past, where we basically take some problems that people are having. They can't quite figure out what to do about life in general, and we try to answer them in a Jesus fashion that would direct them more towards a relationship with God and hopefully get some more wise counsel than maybe the world has to offer. So I have some... We do what's called Pope style advice, where basically the premise is, you know, people have mistakenly thought that I am the Pope. There's been 10,000 people roaming about the neighborhood. They've ended up on my lawn, and they believe that I am the Pope. They're very much mistaken, but they refuse to leave until I produce some type of advice for them. And I was thinking about that a little bit this week, and I don't know. So it just came to a realization to me about. When you're talking about making disciples and you're talking about talking to people about Jesus, sometimes actually this parallels a little bit towards your relationships that you have at home too with your wife and your kids. But sometimes it's not all about quality time. Sometimes it is very much about quantity. Sometimes it really is about how much time you spend with somebody. Whether it's having a deep, you know, theological, you know, bang up conversation or talking about them and their lives or just sitting there, you know, whatever, you know, having a cup of coffee and staring at something, you know, or fixing a car or you know, there's a million things that are not as emotionally engaging as grabbing a guy by the shirt tails and say, what are you doing with yourself? You know, like not every conversation that you have has to be a boots to the ground. You know, it's rebuking time. You know, sometimes it's just spending some time with a guy. And so, I don't know. I think it really dawned on me after a while. I've a couple fellas that I've been talking to, and the more time that I am around them or spend with them, and just you know, engage in their life, the more that that when that time comes for a person to start talking into your life about their relationship with Jesus Christ, the more that means. And the same thing is true. You know, I hear a lot of guys, you know, talk about their relationship with their wife, and they're like, "Eh, you know, I work a lot, or I have a lot of outside stuff going on, but I need to get some quality time with the kids." The truth of the matter is, you probably need to get some quantity time with your kids, because quantity will produce quality eventually. Like it may be even not. It might just be awkward if you're not at home all the time. But like. Certain, the more you get to know somebody and the more you get used to their life and how you fit into it, the more quality time springs up from that, because you can cut the chaff out. You know, you can separate what's important, what's not, and the quality will be there. And that is only usually achieved through quantity time. And so I usually, like I said, I hear the phrase quality over quantity. And really, I don't be so fast to push that quantity out the door. And don't be so fast to decide that the amount of time that you've given somebody, something, or some cause, or whatever you're involved with, is enough, because you feel like you're giving your best when you get there. Sometimes your best isn't enough. Sometimes you need your best times 10, and you can't produce any more than your best, so you just have to be there 10 times. And so, especially when it comes to the discipleship stuff, when it comes to talking to people about Jesus, you can't be. That's why people hate the guy at the gas station. That's why people hate pamphlets. There's no investment in them there. There's no investment in a guy's life there. That's why I feel cheated at the confession booth. That's not an investment in me. That's not an investment in my walk or how I ended up sinning in the first place. That's just a, hey, we'll call it good, now you can go. And really, if you want to see some roads being made and some decisions being made to cut some things out or gain some things or make some relationships, that has to be done through time investment with somebody. And, sometimes that's hard to hear. You look at your schedule, you look at your life, and you're like, I just don't have time to be investing in a bunch of people. But the truth of the matter is, you're going to go through seasons in your life where you seriously don't have time, and you need to discern that. Don't be making buddies with 10 guys and making 15 promises that you can't keep. Sometimes you just don't have time. I see a lot of opportunity in your, say, early 20s, and then maybe after your kids go, if you've started a family, I see a lot of opportunities there for your time to get a little bit more flexible, even when your kids start to get a little bit older and be a little bit more independent. You've made promises to your wife and your children, and you're going to keep those. That's not an option for you. But after that's done, and depending on the level of involvement that you still, you know, requires you as a husband or a father, your time starts to open up. And you need to use that availability to the advantage of building some relationships with some people where the investment will bear fruit. So I think that's my Pope style advice. If you are serious about discipling somebody, you're serious about spreading the gospel of Jesus Christ, don't think a pamphlet's going to do it. Don't think brushing up on your theology is going to do it. These are all great things to do. You know, read your Bible and pray, and you're going to need the Holy Spirit's help here, but you're going to need time. And you're going to need you're going to have to take that time to invest in some people, because without that, you're just another guy screaming at them. Doesn't matter what you're saying; they just hear the Charlie Brown teacher. That's it.
Yeah, and I think that I think you're right on with the time thing. I was while you were talking, an example that came to my mind was so like every night before my kids go to bed, like we read a Bible story, and it like my oldest daughter just really likes that. But that's quality time because it was quantity time. Because we started doing that, it became something that she really enjoyed and that we do every night before she goes to bed, and that she really that she doesn't like to miss. But like when we started, it wasn't like that, and I haven't done anything differently. I mean, we're just reading through the Bible, and it's that quantity time made that time quality, and she'll be able to look back and say, like, that's the thing I really remember, spending time with my dad reading the Bible before we went to bed. And it's not like she doesn't spend other time with me, and it's not like she doesn't spend other time reading the Bible, but there's something about that time, because of the quantity that was put into it, it becomes quality time and something that she really likes. And I think we would be, I think you're right, I think sometimes we feel like we can punch in and punch out of things. Like, I gave it the best effort I could. I really tried hard, because a lot of the way that we as human beings orient ourselves is to like momentary awesomeness. Is we seek to say, you know, do the best that you can right now, and give it your all, and then kind of fall down, and then the next thing you do, give it your all. And but we're not long term folks. We don't do long term commitments. We don't do long term. Working on things, struggling through things, being next to people. We just want to pop in and pop out, get the experience, get the time, say that we checked in, and then kind of go. And then we're surprised that our world doesn't reflect deep connections, deep commitments, deep lessons. And it's simply because we're not making an investment to do so. We live in a cheap culture that often has cheap values, cheap time, cheap goals. And nothing is worth a commitment, and that's exactly what we actually end up getting out of it, even in our disciple making.
Yeah, and actually to tag on to that, I've been thinking about this a little bit lately too. It goes across for both ladies and dudes, but like there's a certain amount of a responsibility a person can take, and I guess the other half of that was kind of watch where you're agreeing to take responsibility to. Like, not everyone's going to be the manager at your place. Not everyone's going to be the up and comer at your place. You know, like I can only you know, put out so much responsibility for things. And if I use 70% of my responsibility capabilities at my job, that only leaves 30% for my family and my wife and other people, and talking to people about Jesus. And like, I don't have that. That didn't seem like a good trade to me, you know. So like, when the opportunity comes up for a promotion that's going to take more time and you know, more money, that's something to pray on and think about. Like, everybody could use the more money, but like, are you willing to sacrifice the things that you're going to have to give up to get it? And I'm not saying that succeeding at your job is a bad thing, but it's basically measuring out your responsibility and seeing where you want to put it. I can probably honestly say I'm not seeking, looking forward to, or have any ambition to eventually manage the place where I work. I'm just not interested in it. I'm interested in going there and being a good representation of Christ while I'm there, and accepting an honest paycheck, and then leaving and accepting responsibility for a lot of other things. And it will. I can't imagine the day that that was switched. Maybe when I get older. But like, I have no intention of moving up any type of ladder. I just want to get an honest day's work and an honest day's money so I can go home and enjoy the responsibilities that I've agreed to. And so, and maybe that's a message more pointed towards towards young men. But like, you know, it's not a bad thing to be good at your job. It's not a bad thing to strive at doing your company well. Frankly, they're paying you and they're keeping your family fed. But be careful that like your ambition doesn't trade over to where you think that you're going to now be, you know, the king of everything at your workplace and still hold up your end of the bargain at home, because it can be done. But boy, it takes the right guy. You know, you got to realize what your capabilities are and what you want out of life. I don't have time to disciple three guys and really invest the quantity and quality time in a person if I'm spending 60 hours a week at work. I can't do that.
Right.
And so, once again, I'm not saying that working is a bad thing or striving to do well at your job is a bad thing. I'm just saying make sure you know what you're trading, you know? Sometimes it's a hard decision. People measure your success by where you're at your job most times. The Bible doesn't do that. They measure your success on you know, when Jesus says, if you love me, obey my commands. Your success is measured on how much you love Jesus Christ. And Jesus Christ says, I need you to follow these things. And you've already agreed to, you know, this, 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 and this. And I need you to, as you go, tell people about me. If you don't have any time for that, that's not a success, right? You're just trading God's money between hands. He gave it to your boss gave it to you, and you gave it to the guy at the store. You know, God's just watching his money go in a circle. That's not impressive.
Right. Yeah, here, you neglect to tithe it. I'm done holding it now.
So that's my Pope style advice.
All right. Pope has spoken. Pope 2, Buva, what do you got?
Pope 2, that's me. Yeah. All right.
You're Pope 2.
So, in the last couple weeks, I don't know if you guys have talked anything about it. What's been going on with me on the show? I don't think you would have, but
we have those HIPAA laws. We can't talk about your medical.
Well, yeah. So thank you. I appreciate you keeping my confidentiality. Not going into any details, but the last couple weeks I've been in the hospital.
You had a vestigial tail. Go.
Yes, I had a elongation on my spine that turned into a tail. Had to get rid of it, getting awkward. For different circumstances, I've been in the hospital the last couple weeks. A very, very, very large scare for me. Could have resulted in a life-altering medical things happening. And thanks to the awesomeness of God, it did not happen. What I really honestly was preparing myself for didn't happen. So God has been awesome in my life forever, but more prevalently in the last couple weeks. So my Pope-style advice kind of goes directly on what I've experienced in the last 2.5 weeks, and that is just trust him. Seriously, seriously stop and trust him. You know, he talks about the fact that he's going to take care of you. And it says in the Bible that it talks about, and everybody knows the verses in Matthew, but it talks about the flowers of the field, you know, being completely taken care of for. And I'm not quoting directly, so please, you know, don't hurt me for doing this. But it talks about even Solomon and all of his greatness, you know, wasn't even as beautiful as the flowers of the field. And they didn't fret one day and all the different stuff. And I have seriously gotten a lesson in the last couple of weeks of just stop yourself and just trust him and seriously put all of your stake in God and every bit of everything that you have, you know, all of the crazy stuff that happens to us on a daily basis and the stuff that we're never prepared for, and the stuff that comes out of absolutely nowhere that hits us, you know, whether it be financially, whether it be our health, whether it be our friends or our family, you know, losses in family, losses in friends, things like that, all these different situations that we know happen. It boils down to seriously trust him. God has completely championed over my life the last 3 weeks some serious, serious things that I cannot put past anyone. Just the fact that God's been working seriously hard in my life. Like I said, I'm not going to go into too much detail, but I am now not going to go into debt for the next years coming up because of God working miracles in my life. I'm not going to be an amputee because of the fact that God's working miracles in my life right now. And every single day I woke up scared and I would have to sit there and I would have to just completely give it to God. And I'd wake up in the hospital another day, surgeons telling me, you know, a couple more days, everything's not done yet, just a couple more days. Okay, God, you're scaring the heebie-jeebies out of me, but I trust you entirely. So, you know, that's exactly what my Pope's advice is. Seriously, seriously, stop worrying and just trust God entirely. It may not end up the way that you want it to, but it's going to end up the way God wants it to. And trust me, that's going to be a better deal for you anyway. So trust God.
I know sometimes I feel this, like, this seems like a real weird thing to say, but like oftentimes because there's just so much infrastructure in our lives, it's not often that you really feel like you have to let go and actually trust him.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, oh, you know, there's governmental things used to support me. There's, you know, family. I got a bunch of, like, things, like, safety nets around you everywhere. And you feel like it's not often where you find yourself in a situation where, like, it's either complete trust or get off the bandwagon. And it's interesting, as you were talking, it's to long for that a little bit. To think, you know, I'm not asking to have to be put in that situation, but like, can you reorient my heart to have that without having to do that?
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying? Like, to not take those things for granted. Even though some of those safety nets are blessings. I mean, are things,
yeah, absolutely.
That, you know, but like, you know, being in a church community where if you fall, there will be people there to catch you. That's a design. But you know, there's something there to think, you know, what if your everyday looked like that? And you didn't have to be in a dire circumstances, have a rock over your face for you to think, you know, yes, that's how I approach the day with that thought. And you can know that, but can you really, I mean, know that, without being in that circumstance? It's just, I don't know. It's just something
I feel like that would be extremely freeing.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
there'd be a lot of freedom in life. If you could take that perspective on a daily basis.
Well, I feel like, you know, I just put myself in Paul's shoes, in the early apostles' shoes. Of that was their everyday. You know, that was their absolute everyday. God, I have absolutely nothing. I have no possessions. I have no home. You know, I have no stake in anyone's life. I am here for you, and I trust you entirely just to provide for me and put me where you want me to be.
Yeah, take this thorn out of my side. No.
Yeah, no, okay. No. Okay.
Okay.
All right. Where am I going next, guys?
That's fair.
That's fair.
That is fair.
And it, to be honest, you're absolutely right. It was completely freeing. It was, you know, faith reinforcing. And coming out of it, you know, I'm not fully out of it, out of the thick right now, but on the final stretch kind of deal, you know, it's completely refreshing. Because I too am in that same situation where I know the infrastructure is in my life and I know that I do have, you know, safety nets and things like that. And I'm not sitting there every time I go and eat food, you know, thinking I'm trusting God for this not to be poisonous and not to kill me. And then every time I get in my car, I'm trusting God fully right now so that I don't get in a car accident.
Yeah.
Or if I do, he's going to provide for me. You know, we don't, a lot of people, I mean, I'm guessing that a lot of people don't sit there and think like that.
Yeah, how often do we presume upon his grace when there may be botulism around the corner?
Right, exactly. It's like, God, please don't let me get salmonella today. I really don't want that. I'm trusting you entirely. But when it's shoved in your face.
You could not fall asleep in the midst of your nightly prayer singing his praises. Here's a list of things I'm glad you didn't kill me with today. One, dinosaur.
Thanks spider. For getting rid of them before I ever had to walk the earth.
Two,
I really appreciate
Count Chocula. I'm not sure whether he's around or not, but I feel like you had head in it.
I'm not sure if zombies are real or not, but I really appreciate you keeping them away from me.
It's easy to say we have trust and we believe in God, and everybody who is a person of faith is like, yeah, I trust God. But it's not until it's tested that you really know. You know,
that's the truth.
Because they're empty words. Of course, I believe in God. Of course, I trust that God's going to take care of me. And then, do I?
Well, yeah, exactly. I've been the, you know, I trust God entirely. And, you
unless
know, I know
hardship.
He's going to. Right. I know he's going to take care of me. And then I have to be completely honest. When I first was confronted with the things that I've been confronted with, I crumbled. Completely crumbled. It wasn't, I'm running to God. God, you know, you're my savior. You're my rock. You are the one that I can stand upon. And, you know, you have all of this under control. It was, oh, no. What am I going to do? And it took amazing people in my life and my own dumb head getting out of the way of itself, thinking to myself, you know what, why am I worried? I have the God of the universe that says he loves me more than I could ever even imagine, sent his son to die on a cross for me, was brutally murdered, knowing every sin that I've ever committed, loved me more than I could ever even imagine the word means. Who am I to worry?
Yeah.
Who am I to sit here and say I'm not sure when the God of the universe is standing right behind me with his hands on my shoulders going, I got it.
Yeah. You said, God, let me out of this hospital. He said, no.
No.
Now, part of the depth of faith there comes with, you know, as you study the Bible and you read the Bible, you're more familiar with the Bible, is the understanding of that. Does that's not like the prayer book that Ben was talking about earlier. Right. It, you know, guess what? Stephen got stoned and died. You know, Paul the apostle was stoned and left for dead.
Right.
You know, he went through the fire.
Right.
You know what? Both of them were quite fine. Stephen, in his, you know, dying breath, looks up and he sees Jesus basically standing and giving him a standing ovation. He's like, it's okay.
Yeah.
Even though my life ends, I'm in good hands.
Yeah.
You know, and not that you're like an, you know, but I'm just saying that's
not that you're like a major Bible character or anything. No,
I mean, not that you're going to Paul like, dead.
Dan,
anyway.
Please don't ever compare me to Paul.
No.
You're the new Paul. Congratulations.
We are in trouble.
I'm just saying this, that trust that says, yeah, I trust God will take care of me. That doesn't mean I trust I will not have hardship.
Right.
It means I trust even in the hardship. You know, if I'm diagnosed with cancer or something, which is not what your situation was, that you know, if this takes me, I'm still okay.
Right.
Or if it doesn't, I'm okay. God's got this.
If your faith is taking you to a point of, you know, I trust God because I'm not going to go through anything that's going to be painful, and I'm not going to go through any kind of hardship, I trust God to do that, you're reading the wrong book.
Yeah.
God does not ever say, you won't be in pain ever.
Yeah.
You won't ever go through a hardship.
Yeah, well, too often we look at trust meaning, well, I trust I won't hurt. I trust the road will be clear and you know, it'll be beautiful sunny skies.
Steady path the whole way.
Exactly. And then it's when it's raining and the road is out and the gas is out and the brakes are out and you're going downhill. You're like, wait a minute, I didn't sign up for this. And you want to bail. It's like, that's when you still trust God.
Yeah, absolutely.
By the way, there's a man named Sal Manila in Arizona. I found him.
As in, like, first name Sal, last name Manila?
Manila, yeah.
Who would do that to their child?
I'm guessing he was an old man.
Bill Manila.
The Arizona Manilas.
Hey, what's your name, sir? E. Coli?
Or Milla Manila.
You're listening to Live from the Path.
Love those guys.
We're here every week at livefromthepath.org, Monday nights from 10 to 11, and on 99.3 KTIA on Saturdays at 7 o'clock. And we're glad to be here with you. Hey, if you got anything that you want to tell us that doesn't have any vulgarity in it, you can send us an email at info@livefromthepath.org. If it's something that has vulgarity in it, you can send that to Dan Hudson at livefromthepath.org.
Thank you.
.org. And Dan will pray for you and your vulgarity. What you got, Mike?
Dear Live from the Path, I am upset with myself for getting my granddaughter the cell phone she begged me for. I wish the phone companies would put restrictions on them. I wondered why she was feeling tired in the mornings until I caught her on the phone at 4 a.m. She can't get dressed in the morning because she's texting every 2 minutes. When her friend, who she was always very active with, came over, the girl wound up watching a movie with me because my granddaughter would not stop texting in her bedroom. She wasn't like this until she got this new boyfriend, and he must have no life at all. Should I talk to his parents? It is consuming her life morning, noon, and night. I have told her she can't have the phone until her homework is done.
Iron fist, Grandma.
Yeah, that's the exactly. Way to really put it to her.
I bought her a cotton candy machine. I don't understand why she keeps eating cotton candy.
She's eating cats in her hair.
She's getting huge.
She's got a half up her nose, and I told her she can't have it until she gets the first thing out of her hair.
She walks around naked all day because she can't get dressed. She's got cotton candy in her arm.
Jeez. I get her McDonald's every day. I don't know why she's getting fat.
Yeah, I feel like... Now, hold on. Now, some of the emphasis was obviously put on by me. I don't know whether she emphasized the same words I emphasized, but... You need to take that phone away.
Yeah.
It is not her low-life boyfriend, no life. It's not his fault. You know what I'm saying? She can't text if she don't have the phone.
Yeah.
That's lame. Just take it away. It was a mistake. You made a mistake.
Take the phone away.
Yeah, take the phone away.
Can the phone companies put restrictions on that? Oh, yeah, it's the phone company's fault. The guy who's in business to make money off your phone calls. Hey,
I bought this Xbox for the kids, and they won't get off it. Will those guys come and spank my kids for me?
I feel like Xbox turns on too long. It should turn off after a while.
Maybe we can overheat or something like that.
Holy cow. It says... Secular says, you shouldn't expect the phone company to decide what is acceptable in your home. As the adult in your household, it's up to you to assert control.
Yeah.
If your granddaughter lives with you, by all means, talk to the boyfriend's parents about this.
Oh, lame.
What?
She had me. Then she lost me.
Lame.
But equally important, enforce cell phone limits. If you think she can't be trusted not to use it after lights out, see that she gives you her phone at bedtime. In the morning, return it to her once she's dressed and ready for school. And when she invites friends over, make sure she understands it is her responsibility, not yours, to entertain them. Because what she did was rude.
I feel like she didn't invite that friend over. I feel like the friend's lame and just came over.
Yeah, I think so. Probably just stops by all the time.
I mean, let's be real.
I'd like to see what movie they decided to watch together.
I got Little Nemo.
Good. I also have the last episode of Dallas. What do you think?
I'll be in my room texting.
I'll be in my room texting. Have
my
fun.
Grandma's watching Dallas.
Now, here's the deal. It's wrong to assume that that guy is also up till 4 o'clock. My guess is he gave up around 1:30, and she was texting him anyway.
Yeah.
Like, why aren't you responding to me?
Don't you love me anymore?
Yeah. Yeah, she said something off color at like 1:30. He went to bed not thinking anything of it. She's like, no, seriously, I didn't mean it.
Yeah.
No, come on. Don't bring up me.
Are you texting Becca?
Yeah.
Becca's watching a movie with my grandma.
Dear Life from the Path, I've met a darling man I'm compatible with in every way. We have similar tastes in just about everything from decorating and landscaping to entertainment.
I feel a butt coming.
My problem is his past. From what he says, he has never had a monogamous relationship, even during his marriage. After the divorce, he pursued anything female.
Is that in quotations?
No, but okay. I like his honesty so far, at least. When we are out at a club or concert, I constantly encounter women he has been with. He tells me he's happy... Hold on a minute. It tells me he's happy for the first time in his life, and he would never cheat on me. Oh, right on. I've never been the jealous type, but I'm really not, and I'm really not now. I just don't want to be the woman everyone is laughing at because they know his history. As I said, we are content and happy, but I need to move past this or move on, I guess.
All right. You can't be compatible in every way except for the fact that he's a philandering whoremonger.
That he is compatible with everybody else.
It's like saying there's nothing wrong with him except for this one time he murdered a guy.
He's an amorphous blob. He is compatible with whatever shape he's currently on. He's like Jell-O.
Oh. Hey, now he must be kind of a fetch because, I mean, he seems to be able to meet a bunch of ladies.
It tells me he knows how to sweet talk.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I'd never do that to you, baby.
Yeah, actually, yeah. I don't know any real marriages where they're like, we're compatible every way. They're like, he's kind of a slob.
Yeah.
I do love him, but he's got so many faults.
Yeah. Anybody that got married and doesn't, at least to a certain extent, like in dark corners in the middle of the night, say, I feel like I got sold a bill of goods a little bit. I mean, just a little bit of bill of goods.
Like where they're holding the bat because they think someone broke in, and it's either guitar or your husband. You're like, I don't really care. I'm going to hit it. That's the real marriage right there. When you're in your undies swinging a bat at the nighttime.
You get leave him directly.
Yeah.
Leave him directly.
I'm in.
Yeah.
And stop going to places where he picks up women.
Right.
What kind of clubs are you going
exactly.
to?
This is where I usually find ladies. Let's go there.
Let's go to the keg. It's like, what?
Let's see if you fit in here like everyone else I know. Wow, that's terrible.
I just am envisioning him and her walking through a bar, and he's like, hey, Sandy. Hey, Denise. Yeah. Oh, hey, Sandra. What's up? Nicole, hey.
Don't worry. It's in the past, except for just right there, where I met these ladies and talked to them for a while.
We're still within 20-mile radius of each other at all points in time. It's okay.
Segular says, you say this darling man has never had a monogamous relationship before, during, or after his marriage. Therefore, the odds aren't great that he'll have one with you. It's time to ask yourself, not me, if you would be willing to tolerate his fooling around if you were his wife. Okay, hold on. This lady has reached out for advice, obviously not capable of making a correct decision. You don't need to say things like, you should make the decision on whether you're willing to put up with his fooling around on you. The advice is, no. You just have to get rid of this man.
Nope.
No one should have to put up with that, even if you're so stupid to think that you could put up with it. You can't make a good decision. Find
it will not end well. It just won't end well.
What is she given the option? If you decide that you can deal with it, you know, I'm just not worth very much, and I feel like a man that tramples all over me, I can get used to that.
Yeah, that's right up my alley. As long as we agree on the bushes outside.
You know what? And I'm sorry, ladies, but it's that type of thinking that creates men like that. Yeah. Yeah, that guy gets away with that crap because you've devalued yourself to think that you do not deserve a God-honoring man that treats you with respect. Like, pull yourself together and say no to somebody.
Yeah.
And you know what? You know what that guy does? That guy wanders the streets in the middle of the night looking for a Diet Coke because he can't find a lady. That's how his life ends up like. If someone would say no to him.
If everybody would say no to him.
Yes.
Maybe he might get a job and become productive in society.
He's a sweet talker. They can't say no.
I could change my ways or just continue being successful at manipulating women.
Holy cow. Some women, the wives of attractive or powerful men, are open-minded about it if their husbands are discreet.
Does anybody want to see this guy?
The real question is, are you?
I don't even know.
I'd like to get a look at him, actually.
I think he looks like Gary Busey.
Wow.
Arrested.
He's a darling guy doesn't look like Gary Busey.
What if he combed his hair?
No.
Yeah, no. I don't think that's the problem.
He might be like a younger brother of a Michael Douglas. Older brother of Michael Douglas.
Maybe that guy that used to paint, Bob Ross.
No, he doesn't.
Wow. You are just coming up with character profiles that I'm not matching along with.
Not a lot of ladies. He's monogamous, definitely.
Of course he is.
A man like that can barely get a pickup line out.
Hi, I'm Bob Ross. Yeah, right. I've asked the Lord many times to get Bob Ross away from me.
He called 10 women fluffy, and that was it. That was the end.
You got time for one more, Ben?
You got about a minute.
No time.
All right. Thank you. Thank you, Mike. you've been listening to Live from the Path. I hope you enjoyed that advice. If you were that poor lady, no, seriously, I mean, stop listening to the program. Call him right now. I sent him a text, whatever.
Hey, you know what? Have him call in. I'll talk to him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm pretty debonair, fellas.
Yeah.
Thank you for hanging out with us. Hey, big thanks to our sponsors, Bob Eisenhower with the Eisenhower Team. Go to EisenhowerTeam.com for all your buying and selling of real estate needs. Bob can help you out. He's a great, great friend of the show. And an awesome realtor, so make sure to check him out. Also, Westfield Veterinary Hospital in Johnston. If your cat's having my dog's got a growth coming out of her behind. And, like, I really need to get it looked at. And I feel like Westfield's next on the docket. Yeah, it's not right. It's not right.
Man, that's messed up.
Sometimes the other dogs play with it.
it's absolutely disgusting.
That's what I'm saying. Here's the deal.
You better take them.
You can hide your eyes or you take it to Westfield. Those people like to deal with that stuff. That's kind of their gig. Go to Westfield Veterinary Hospital in Johnston. They do an awesome job. Actually, I've had pets in there before and they do a great job. They're awesome to deal with. They take an excellent care of your pets and extremely trustworthy. Check them out. Thanks for listening to Live from the Path. We will catch you next week. Have a good week. Start clearing some of them stories with the Westfield folks. That growth out of the dog's butt thing, maybe they don't like that stuff.
Oh, they're all right.
I was going to say, I can't imagine they're going to be like, yes! Well, finally, another growth is coming on in.
It's their foray. You ever tried to cut a dog's fingernails?
Oh, I can't do it.
It's rough, man. My wife does that. I don't even come near it.
I'll let the groomers do it.
Yeah.
I was going to say, don't they have the, like, weird...
The something that's too close.
Yes.
If you give it a nipsy, like... You just went from circumcision to, like, decapitation.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. What you got, Mike?
Wow, there's some weird stuff going on.
Me and Boo were trying to clear some time here about dog decapitation.
It's not going great.
Dear Life from the Path, I'm 19, and because of some traumatic events in my past, I'm afraid of the dark and sleep with my baby blanket.
Whoa.
I went to counseling about it, but eventually stopped because it didn't really help. I haven't had any real problems as a result of the issue because I live at home, and my boyfriend has been supportive in accommodating my needs when I stay with him. Plus, I don't need my blanket when I'm with him. My concern is about the upcoming semester. I'll have to move to the main campus of my university in order to continue my education. This means I'll be living in a shared dorm. The two times it came up during high school, I was teased mercilessly until something else came along. While I have reached the point where I can go without my blanket for a few nights, any longer and it starts to get to me. I don't want to have problems when I move to the main campus because I'm already going to stand out for moving in the middle of the year. But I don't know how to keep training myself to give up my blanket.
I'm sorry. Okay.
I can't handle this professionally. I may have to bow out.
So, certain traumatic things have happened to you, and I don't know anything personal about that, and I've never had to deal with that myself. But if you've been able to train yourself so far to be able to go a couple days without the blanket, obviously, and, you know, continuation if it is 3 days or 4 days or 5 days. If that's been progressive, if you've been able to go from not being able to go without it to 1 day to 2 day to 3 day to 4 day, you know, I would continue that growth. You know, whatever it is you're doing to wean yourself off of that. I don't know a better way to say that, but however you're weaning yourself off of the use of that blanket, continue to do so, and you may be able to completely eliminate that 1 day, or go, you know, a month, 2 months, 3 months, 4 months, to where it doesn't even make sense why you had it in the first place. So if that's been progressive, I would continue whatever you've been doing to get to a place where you're able to go a couple days without it.
I don't understand why this is a deal. I mean, just sleep with the blanket.
That's what I was going to say. Don't worry about it. Just bring it, hide it under another blanket.
Fold it, put it underneath the pillow.
Yeah.
When the lights turn out, whoop it out.
Yeah.
Cuddle on it all you want.
I would agree, but at the same time, obviously this person is not super excited about the fact that they have to do it.
Bring a teddy bear that has his own little blanket that's a piece of your blanket.
Or you can just put the blanket under a comforter. And you'll be fine.
Yeah.
Hey, man, we all got weird picadillos, right?
Hey.
If this person, though, seems to want to get rid of it, I mean, obviously, they don't enjoy having to do it. I would say continue to train yourself.
Make a pair of sleep pants out of it.
Yeah.
Then you get the both worlds.
Now you can't cuddle with it, Dan. Look, here's the deal, boys. This question's above our pay grade. Okay? The answer is keep the blanket. Just keep it.
Yeah, hold on to it. Be proud.
Yeah, there are no reason to make a big... Here's the deal. If you're not sleeping at your boyfriend's place, because you probably shouldn't be, because you ain't married to him under the name of Jesus, what do you care what he thinks anyway? Number two, let's say your roommate catches you sleeping with a blanket. Who cares? She's drunk. It's not a big deal.
I guess I don't understand. Like, is it like an obvious, like, little kid's blanket?
I was going to say, is it a small square that has Barney on it
little
or something?
Mermaid.
Well, hold on.
Well,
she said she was 19.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that would put circa about, you know, almost 20 years ago. So that's 1993. Might be Rugrats or something.
Power Rangers.
Could be Power Rangers. Either way.
I was going to say that's my age.
Especially if it's ambiguous.
I'm no psychologist, right? But, like, what would happen if it was just gone? I'm okay with sleep. I'm okay with keeping the blanket, by the way. But, like, what would happen if just it was just gone?
I think you'd have some serious anxiety.
Yes.
For, like, how long?
She get over it.
Yeah.
In a week. It's a couple weeks, month.
Here's the deal.
But do it anyway. Bring it.
Yeah.
Have fun with it. Embrace it.
I'd put it up as a curtain.
I'd say, hey, guys, look at this. This is my little blankie.
Yeah.
Don't touch it.
Everybody laugh like you were kidding. You're like,
she said she was
kidding. I use it.
Mercilessly teased. In high school.
Everybody's mercilessly teasing.
I know, but it said it brought upon other things. Well, so obviously, this has been a seriously tormenting thing for her.
That doesn't have to be. Here's the deal.
She used the word mercilessly teased. Well,
but here's the deal. That's a perspective from someone who refuses to own it.
No,
yeah, like, exactly. Hey, she's embarrassed.
Hey, Ben, you got a mole on your arm. I do have a mole on my arm. Why don't I just say, yeah, that's right on.
You got a problem with
that? That's a big hairy mole. I said, well, it's not way hairy, but it's got a few.
I watched kids in high school mercilessly tease a guy in a wheelchair. You know what I'm saying? He's still in a wheelchair. You know what I'm saying? He just owned it and got out of high school. High school sucks. There's nothing the long and short of that. But, like, seriously, just own the thing. You like to sleep with a blanket? Sleep with a blanket. You in a wheelchair? Love that wheelchair. You got a crazy mole arm? Love it. Show
Stop
it to
talking about my mole.
Actually, put on a long sleeve shirt. Nobody liked that. Ain't nobody got time for that.
I think this is one that we're just going to have to disagree on, then, fellas.
Wait, but you're still trying to get rid of the blanket?
I still disagree. I think she wants to get rid of it.
She just said she doesn't.
Yeah.
She's been trying to get rid of it. She's trained herself to go.
Only because people like you make it fun.
You're thinking
of her.
About this wrong. If you can go one night, you can go a million nights.
I agree, but I think it needs to be progressive. I think it would seriously bring on some serious anxiety issues or something to where she's gone to a professional about this.
That she said doesn't help, so she wrote to the newspaper.
Right.
Yeah.
So she's seeking help, though.
Only because people make fun of her.
I don't think that just telling her own it is going to work.
Why?
So you're saying that this person has been holding on to a baby blanket for years, needs to sleep with this because she's deathly afraid of the dark because of a traumatic experience when she was younger, was mercilessly teased in high school, has gone to a professional about this, and is now going to take our advice of just own it.
No.
And she's going to go, okay, awesome. That really helped. I appreciate that.
You know what? Because the therapist didn't say that. They gave some kind of cockamamie answer about, like, all the stuff that you want to do.
Yeah.
You own it.
Okay. Like,
and then all of a sudden you'll say, this is silly, and you don't need it.
Yeah.
Let's hope so.
Within time.
The chat wants to know if she was going to sleep in the middle of a class with her blanket.
No.
How did they know?
Because the roommate would know.
It's college. Who cares? They don't care.
It's not happening in college. Nobody in college cares. They don't care. Sleep with your blanket. I don't care.
Come, go. We don't care.
Have you
whatever.
Been to a college campus? There's some weird people there.
Yeah.
That blanket thing is going to go right under the roof.
Yeah.
I was on a college campus.
See?
Enough said. I was the weird one.
There's a guy. Listen to me. There's going to be a guy in the dorm next door to you that travels by hula hoop. Yeah. You are not the weirdest one on there. Seriously. It is not a concern.
Yeah.
Okay. Here's secular says. Let's see. You might not have to give this thing up. I have a suggestion that might be helpful, but it would require having your blanket converted into a huggy pillow. That way you can still sleep with it, but it no longer resembles a baby blanket.
It's basically a pair of pants, what you're saying.
Many people sleep with an extra pillow, so it wouldn't appear to be odd at all.
Yeah?
Booba hates that. He wants you to give it up completely.
No. Spend 20 years in therapy. Slowly but surely give away a corner a semester until you're out of a blanket by the time you're 95.
Yep. That's what I was saying.
Here we go. One more. Dear... Live from the path, my vegetarian, won't harm a fly husband, owns two handguns. They were bought before I met him. He knows I don't approve. I have always felt strongly about not raising children in a home where guns are kept. His argument for having them is that he distrusts our government. He claims the guns will protect our family if there's ever an uprising or a riot. While I support his desire to protect our family, I'm frightened by much more immediate possibility of an accident happening, or the children finding them and harming themselves or someone else. We plan to start a family in the near future, and I've tried to talk to him into either getting rid of the guns or storing them elsewhere. Every time I raise the subject, it turns into an argument, and he insists he will not get rid of them. I'm at a loss about how to resolve this problem. Any advice?
Does she eat with her hands?
The lady?
Does it say whether she eats with her hands exclusively or not?
No, it makes no mention of that.
I'm guessing they have, say, forks and knives in the house, and they've taught the kids how to deal responsibly with them. Like, they don't get the steak knife when they're five. You know, you don't handle the weapon. You otherwise keep it in a safe place where the three-year-old can't touch it. You lock it up. Like, there's things that you teach people to deal with responsibly. And so, now, here's the deal, though. That guy could be two sheets of wacko, though. Because, like, let's say you're protecting yourself against the government. Let's say the government really wanted to assault you and your family. Your two handguns and whatever box of bullets you have isn't going to do anything about it.
No, that's just... I'm going to hold out for 40 days with these two handguns.
You might provide some entertainment for the people that are overthrowing you.
Yeah.
Look at that guy. He's giving it a good college blankie try.
Yeah. Those are...
TV has confused you in believing you can hold off your house from a government.
Those are cute. Those are adorable. Are those handguns?
They'll bring the plane.
Yeah, like the guys that are serious about that. I guess
they get you with
a
drone.
Yeah. That's not happening. But generally speaking, I mean,
if you want to keep vagrants, vagabonds, or lowlifes out, okay, I'm with you.
Yeah.
Well, Booba, what do you think? Should we send him to counseling and he can slowly get rid of his guns over X amount of time?
Convert it into a coffee table.
So I think that obviously this man has some seriously crazy things going on in his head, and I think that we should recommend a counseling plan. We can go ahead and set that up where I think we can... I'm totally kidding. No, I agree entirely.
Your Lord, Booba is a thorn in my side. Please remove him.
No. No, I agree. I agree with Ben entirely. There are certain things that you teach your kids entirely. You know, obviously accidents have happened and do happen statistically throughout the world. But, you know, you teach your kids to look both ways in traffic. You teach your kids to not grab the steak knife and things like that. You teach your kid when he or she is 2-3 years old, when you open up the oven, stay away. This is hot. And 90% of the time, you know, they're going to stay away from it because they realize if you did a good enough job, I don't need to touch that. I need to stay away from that. On top of good parenting and making sure that your kids know that that's a safety thing and that they are not old enough and they need your permission and your guidance to hold those kind of things. You know, obviously someday you're probably going to teach your son or daughter how to shoot, but, you know, keeping them in a safe environment with the guns, keeping them locked up, keeping them, there are plenty of safety precautions you can take as a parent, getting a gun safe, getting a gun rack that is locked off. You have cables that you can put onto each gun that restricts the trigger so that they can't do any harm, anything like that.
Have you always been a pro-gun extremist?
I'm not a pro-gun extremist, but I don't...
Yeah, right. That's what they all say.
Yeah.
I don't own any guns.
I'm completely reasonable.
Yeah. I don't own any guns, and I probably never will.
I can't find an example. So I was doing a Google search for a story in which a child unlocks a gun safe. And so far, I have not found a documented shooting where a kid unlocked a gun safe and shot somebody.
No, it's just like, been the gun that's in the, shoebox in the closet.
It's loaded and on the floor. They left it out when they went on an errand and left the kid at home alone.
I was cleaning it while spinning in a circle around my entire family for a reunion.
I slammed it down to the coffee table. Yeah, no, that's ridiculous. So if you take the right safety precautions, I don't see a problem with it.
Ooh. Okay, ready for secular's advice?
Yeah.
Wait, Dan, did you have a...
I agree with all of you. Proper training and respect and train them how to use it correctly and keep it locked up out of their hand. Yeah, you're all good.
All right.
Secular says, would your vegetarian wouldn't harm a fly husband consider trigger locks for his weapons or a gun safe? If not, then perhaps you should consider raising your children with a man who isn't already married to his guns.
Boo.
Married to his guns.
Hold on, let me start the political van. I'm bringing around.
I've got me some guns, and we've been just fine.
Seriously, you gonna divorce a guy over this? Wow.
Till death do us part.
Now hold on.
Great job, secular.
Hold on. I'm gonna cut that short. His per the earlier discussion, his standoff against the government. He might not have all of his dominoes in a train. You know what I'm saying?
He could just be a blowhard. People are like that. You know.
I mean, I wouldn't submit to an idiot like
to a Muslim.
I'm leading this family, and in case of government attack, I got 2 6-shooters.
But then when the government comes knocking with a tank, he's going to set both of his guns down and lay on the ground like everyone else is going to do.
Yeah. Or they're going to blow up his house.
Or they're going to blow up his house, yeah.
Seriously, like, I mean, if they wanted to turn on you, you're 6-shooter.
Right.
Get a cannon.
I am going to fend off an entire military with these two handguns.
Here's what you should realize from this discussion, boys. Women are not fooled by your puffed up man talk. Like that you're going to battle the government and protect your family with 2 handguns.
John, right? Why are you doing karate? If that government comes and gets me, I'm a karate chopper.
If I'm going to go down like that, I'm going down manly with like a bow and arrow or something. Like that at least feels like something.
Ben's in his attic with a crossbow. Like
I would.
Yeah, you'll bite a deer. You'll sit on top of a high-rise building on the corner like a goblin. That's a man way to do it. Instead of whatever, throwing paper grenades out
I'm
your
a midnight
window.
Vigilante.
You can't take me alive. That's not a problem, dude. Yeah. Seriously, not a problem.
This was enough for Aaron Burr. It's enough for you.
Yeah, here's the deal. We didn't consider keeping you alive anyway, John. You weren't part of the grand scheme, if you could believe it. You're listening to Life from the Path on lifefromthepath.org. I think we're about time to wrap up this trade, Ben.
Yeah, that's the truth of it. You can catch us every Monday night from at 9 to 10 o'clock at lifefromthepath.org. Or, if that's too late for you, catch the 7 o'clock show on Saturdays on 99.3 KTA. Make sure you check out the website. Probably a big announcement this week, maybe next week. When it comes to the Christmas time and Live from the Path. So look in the next couple weeks. Hopefully a big announcement surrounding that. And we will see you next week.